Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you guys. This is Felita, and it is February 26th, and we are on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. The name of our show is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman. Tonight we are, give me one second here. Move around some stuff. We are supposed to be having an interview or conversation with L.M. Preston. She is the author of, if I make a mistake, I'm hoping it's a she, Purgatory Rain by L.M. Preston. I'm waiting for her to call in. Hopefully, I can get her. Give me a second here. excuse me. So, while we're waiting for her, I want to say a shout out to my mom. Today was her birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. Excuse me, I want to say happy birthday to anybody else who is born on this day. What I want to do right now, I'm going to do this. I'm going to play some music until we can get Miss Preston, hopefully I am saying her name right, on air. If I can't, what I'll do is I will connect. We can talk on something else tonight, but I really want to talk to her about this book because it seems like it's a very interesting book. So this is what I'll do. I'm going to play you a couple of songs while we wait and see if she's going to be able to call in. Okay? This is Salita on Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network.
Thank you.
baby. If you should happen to see my baby somewhere, would you please tell her I'm waiting with open arms? Would you please make my dreams come true?
Baby.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Fine, how's everything going with you?
It's going great. I want to make sure that I called on time.
Well, actually, we come on exactly at 7, and I guess that's probably what it was, just a little bit of a time difference, because I think it's 8 o'clock there. Where you at? Where you located?
I'm located in Maryland.
Oh, okay, so you are an hour ahead of us. Okay. All right, you're on the East Coast. Okay. So,
yes.
So it is kind of a little of a time difference for us because we're down here in the South. So we're a little bit, we're on Central Standard Time.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. I want to welcome you to Say Your Piece Radio Network through the eyes of the Black woman. And we're going to talk about your book, Purgatory Rain. First of all, I want you to tell our listening audience about who you are.
Well, first of all, I'm a writer, which that's my passion. I'm also an engineer.
Wow.
I'm a mom of four and a wife. Yeah, you know, we all always have to have, a, you know, I'm a superwoman. So, so yes, yeah, so I'm all those things, you know, as we speak. So, yes, and then also, you know, I'm a dog owner, so I just got a new Dalmatian that I totally love. Like I need one more thing to do.
Yeah, you know, it's never enough. It's never enough. We always got to have something else.
Yes.
Okay. So now let's talk about the name of your book. Where did you get that name from?
Well, you know, I kicked around the name a long time. Let's just say it went unnamed for a while. But what I did was I pulled the name from kind of where the character felt. The character feels as though they're isolated, they're alone. They have no control over what, you know, goes on in his life. Peter is, he wants to be loved. He wants a family. He wants that connection with someone so bad, but he feels unworthy of it because of all of the things that have happened to him in his life. So, you know, how young people kind of feel as though there's nowhere they can go. They have no control, but yet they have a mind for where they want to be. And, you know, so that's kind of where I put him in that purgatory.
Okay.
And the rain comes from, you know, that's his time. That's his time of waiting, you know, before he's realized his true purpose.
I like that. I mean, that title alone is like, I want to read this book. This book looks, I love the cover and I love the title. That's a great title. Now, you just described your character. What other characters do you have in there? And I always ask this question. How do you develop your characters? Where do you get your characters from?
Well, to be honest, this character really just, I don't know, he just kind of popped out. For some of my characters, they kind of bug me, you know, like I just, and it's not in a dream. It's really a matter of, you know, when the story idea pops in my head, the character, the main character pops in with them. And Peter, and I don't even know where the name Peter Saints came from. I really don't know. It just kind of stuck, you know. So he just more or less was developed with the story because I had an idea based on this story is actually based on a short story that my husband wrote for a class. I was cleaning out our basement, and he had a short story that he had to write for a class, and it was about the ancestors of this character. And I asked his permission if I could write a younger version of the kids affected by what the short story that he wrote. And this character just, you know, clicked in this, into place. Peter is the main character. The secondary character was, I did a lot of research for my villain in this book. And he has a strong role in this book because I wanted to really show the other side of this story. Because it's very multi-leveled. And I did a lot of research and on this character. I watched some really creepy shows about psychotic killers. And I came up with this dynamic character that that is a very good equal to Peter. Yeah, so I kind of really think about them, but my main characters, they kind of come to me.
Okay. So are these the only two characters you have in the story, or do you have, his mom and dad has been murdered. Okay, does he have, like, a girlfriend, or, you know, does he have time to have all that going
on? Yes, he does. He has two other friends that are with him on this journey.
Okay.
One is named Angel, and it's a little boy that he meets, and one is named Kyle, who is kind of this guy that he needs to help him, but he can't really figure out where Kyle's coming from, because Kyle's, you know, he lies a bit, and he sometimes tells the truth, and he's always conveniently helpful, so he doesn't really know what to think about Kyle. And then he has a love interest that really pushes him to make the ultimate decision to do something that he knows is potentially wrong, but to do it to save her. So, you know, you always have this question where you have a person that has to make a decision to do something, you know, oh, I'm going to save the world, or I'm going to do this. But sometimes in life you want something so bad, someone to love you so bad, someone to, you know, that to save someone, that you run in that split second, you make a very selfish decision, you know, to maybe do something wrong because you think you can make it right. And that's really kind of Peter's, you know, his main vein, you know, that one thing that he has to decide on. And it is probably the one decision that's left a little bit open, because you don't really know if he made the right choice. And he doesn't know if he made the right choice. He thinks he has. But, you know, then you wouldn't have a series if
So you already said something. So you're going to do a series with Purgatory Rain?
Oh, yeah. It's a 3-book series. I'm working on the second book, which is called Deviant Storm. And that one's named appropriately. So if you've read the book, really think about what a deviant storm is. And that really is the gist of that book. It's going to be wicked. Everything's going to be, you know, everything bad is going to be coming out to the light. It's going to be really, really intense. So.
Okay, when you think about Peter Saint, you say his life stinks. And that things are going to get worse. The idea that he saw his parents being murdered, and he had a friend that died in his arms?
Yes. You know how, and she wasn't really a friend. She was a homeless girl that he'd helped, but it seemed as though, you know, he was in an orphanage where he was never supposed to be escaping out of. But he does anyway. And Hannah is a homeless girl that he meets, and he gives her money.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever he saw her, he would give her his money, which it was hard to come by for him. But you know how you meet those people in your life that you help them, but you know they're kind of different. And Hannah was very different.
Definitely.
Right.
And forget about me.
and he couldn't seem to shake her. You know, he wanted to help her and go on his way. And so just like a kid would do, and I really struggle with having him do this because, you know, you want to make your characters likable, but I had to make him realistic. You ever have a person that you know that you purposely try to get rid of, you know, and it doesn't work out well? And that's really what happened with Peter. He was trying to just ditch her, you know, run across the street really quick, get away from her. And she ran after him, even though she's running into, you know, a bad, you know, coming traffic. And she couldn't run. She had a bum leg. So she was limping. She couldn't even keep up with him. So when she died, she gave him a gift. But he didn't see it as a gift for a long time. And the thing was, the guilt that he had with being instrumental, because that's a true guilt. He knew what was the nature of his heart at that time. Even though he did not tell her to follow him, even though she wasn't supposed to follow him. She did, but he knew the nature of his heart was he just wanted to ditch her, you know?
So he
his heart
so
wasn't
he was
in the right place.
Away from her?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes. He was trying to run, you know, figure, oh, a car is coming. I'm gonna run across the street, you know? And
well,
he ran after
he had a bum leg. He's wrong for that.
Yes, but isn't that what a teenager would do?
Yeah.
They don't think, do they? They don't really think. They're more kind of impulsive about what they want, you know?
How old was he? How old was he? Let me see. How old is Peter? Come on.
Well,
now.
He's 16.
Oh, Peter was old enough to know
that. So, you know.
Peter did that on purpose.
he ran from her on purpose. But he didn't mean for her to follow.
Oh, he didn't want her to follow him?
He thought she didn't want her to follow him. He thought she would not follow him, but she did anyway.
Peter robbed. He know he murdered that lady. Come on now. No, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. But he ran across the street and knew, okay, automatically he knew she had a bum leg. Why would you run away from her?
Well, he thought she would stop at the light, you know? you know, when you're running from somebody, you figure, hey, you're not going to follow me across the street. There's a car coming, you know? So he thought that's what she would do, but she didn't.
Oh,
so, and his remorse, for that, I mean, he's never going to truly get over that.
Yeah.
But in a way, but as the story goes on, you realize that in a way, it wasn't truly him, that it was other forces working to make this happen for her. You know, other forces that were manipulating her mind to have her do irrational things. But it's you know, it's got a very heavy mystery element in it because I wanted to try out, you know, adding the layer of mystery to it. So there's a lot that's not revealed to the reader until they really get into the story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. It sounds like it's a real good story. And you basically kind of wrote this for kids. So it's not, it doesn't, how do I want to say, does it have a lot of adult content in it?
Well, it doesn't have sex, but there is, you know, there's sexy scenes, meaning, you know, they talk about it, but it's not, they haven't
something
had it, it's not something that they do, but there's kissing. There is foul language in it, but no F-bombs because for some reason I just can't bring myself to write that, you know, even though I have my teenage son and my teenage daughter do read my books as a beta readers, and they tell me all the time, Mom, man up, you know. You know, they really tease me on that. They're like, this dude is from an orphanage. He's got a hard life. Of course he's going to say the F-bomb, you know.
Yeah, but, yeah, that's
you know, true. You know, but I almost do it, but I cannot do it. I can never finish the word. So it's like it comes out, it'll be like F, and then, you know, somebody will cut them off or, you know. So it's mild in that, but the content is strong. I mean, there is the villain in this, you know, I reveal some very insidious things about him, some very not so nice things about him and his brother, but they're very lightly touched. So you would have to really be, you know, in tune to what that character is saying to get what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But the whole gist of it is the fact that the secret of this lies in Peter's blood is very, it can be, you know, it's a mature theme. Like I wouldn't say have a 12-year-old read it because the villain literally siphons the blood out of the victims in order to open up secret places that have been hidden from people from the beginning of time. And Peter is the key to that. So, you know, in order for him to realize that key, he's done it to several children before. So he siphoned out their bloods and put their blood in his henchmen to do, you know, the unspeakable things that he likes to do.
Oh, so we're talking about the big he? The big he is actually the devil or Satan? Could it be?
Exactly. It's Gavin, the main character, Gavin Steele of Steele Industries, is henchman for a very powerful demon.
Okay.
And one of the things is, in order for him to have that demon has to have certain things happen before it can encompass Gavin's body.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gavin, but Gavin has even a more evil plan. His plan is to obtain his own personal power, thinking that he can control this demon to do so. But in the end, his brother, you know, and him kind of realize that, you know, neither one of them are in control here. So there is an angel and demon play here, but it's not, you know, neither one of them are angels, neither one of them are demons. But it's a very, you know, I make it known that they are certain people that have, you know, these demons influencing them.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very visible to Peter. So...
Okay.
So it's a journey for him to discover kind of what why all of these things have happened.
You have been selected to take part in this anonymous survey.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
It's okay.
Does anybody else notice these demons?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
So,
it's very low key until really the climax, because it's not, that's not what I wanted to drive the story. The story is really about Peter and about him realizing that even though his life has always been riddled with tragedy, that it wasn't tragedy in that it was, you know, it wasn't to bring him down. It was to create the warrior that he truly is. It was to create the strong person that he becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to say that even though Peter had all of these horrible things happen to him and why he felt like he was so unworthy to do anything right, that those were things that were strengthening him, building him, making him stronger, because he never gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the core of this story. It's about, you know, when bad things happen to you that you have no control over, you do have the control in the end when you choose to become, you know, stronger because of these circumstances. And that's really what, you know, what you start to see Peter realize later on through his journey.
Okay, now.
And trust
said,
me, it is action packed. So, you know, you're going to have car chases, you know.
So, are you talking this could be movie material?
Well, you know, I never really thought of it as that, but it would be a great movie, meaning I go to a lot of movies that I sit there and I'm like, this is so boring, or, you know, really, you know. But I didn't write it to be a movie. It's just that I write like I'm watching a movie.
Okay.
So
okay.
Most of my books have that kind of feel, you know, and I don't waste a lot of time, you know, smelling the daisies, you know, so you wouldn't, you know, see poetic prose in my books. That's just not my style. So it tends to move the story. You get the point really fast in the story, you know. So, and then I tend to get bored if something doesn't happen. So I like to motivate myself to write in order to pretty much motivate myself to write. Something has to happen.
Yeah, yeah, something, yeah. You're like me.
Like I could never write romance.
Mm-hmm. Why?
I mean, true romance where it was contemporary romance. I write my contemporary romance. I can only do it short because not enough happens. There's a lot of pining and pining and wanting and wanting and pining, you know. I can read it, but I can't write it.
Huh? I said, instead of just going ahead and getting doing it and getting it over with, you got to play around a little bit, you know.
Exactly. It's a lot of pining and pondering over it and thinking about it and dreaming about it. You know, I can't, you know, for me to get excited about writing it, I have to have a little bit more. But the funny thing is I can read romance. It really relaxes me. But
yeah.
But writing is a different, it comes from a different part of your brain, I think.
Yeah, when it comes to love and relationships and stuff. What if it's a relationship that's not, how do you want to say that? Healthy?
Go right. Yeah. Yeah. Now those. I mean, this book does have romance in it. It is Peter does have a very strong love interest that he's very well involved in. And you know, the funny thing is, the love develops pretty quickly because love kind of develops quickly when you're in a situation of life and death. You know, I truly think. But then I'm a little biased because I dated and married my husband in 3 months. So I guess, you know. So for me, love happens quickly.
Oh, my
so.
God. No, you didn't. Oh,
yes.
No way, shape, form, or fashion. How old were you?
We've been married 20 years, though.
Okay. That's different.
You know, I mean, I knew when I was in high school. Does that count?
Oh, okay. All right. So you
no, but you know, we didn't go to high school together. It's just like I knew him for a couple of months in high school where we kind of dated, and then I didn't see him for like 6 years. And then we dated for 3 months. I think my friends thought I was insane. So, you know, I tend, you know, so maybe to some people who are used to, you know, like the build up, you know, this may be a little fast for them, but I guess because I write what I know, and I know, hey, sometimes it does work.
Oh, my God, 3 months. But you knew him prior to that, but so that's different, yeah. Man.
No, you never know. You know, you really never know. I can honestly say I got to know him, you know, I fell in love with him in 3 months, you know, probably before that, but I didn't really get to know him until we got married because I'm telling you, being someone's friend and being your wife are two totally different things.
Okay. Yeah, but, you know, it's good to be the friend first. It really is. People don't understand that. They really don't grasp that concept of being a friend first. No matter how long it is, as long as you guys have a friendship
right first. And
that's
the thing.
I think it makes all the money. Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. In this book, they're friends first. You know,
mm-hmm.
he shares more with her than he's shared with anybody, but, you know, it's a
mm-hmm.
life and death kind of situation, and that kind of speeds things up. But when
mm-hmm.
you share and you bare yourself to someone and they accept that, you
mm-hmm.
know, they accept the ugly parts and you're telling them that,
mm-hmm.
for guys, it doesn't have to be long. You know, we women, we want to be cautious.
Yeah.
Guys, they're really visual people. I mean, my son, I totally ran this by him, and I said, well, is this realistic? And he said, oh, yeah, she's hot. I'm all over her. You know, I'm partially halfway to love, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I think the male psyche, that's really kind of the way they are. You know, if they click and a guy's not going to think about it that much unless, you know, he's kind of been kicked around the can a little bit. But, but yeah, so that is the thing. It's a teen love situation. So, you know, something bad happens, you're here, I'm here, you're hot, I'm hot, you know. Bit of bang, big and boom, you know, we're in love.
Yeah. Now, I don't think being married like that, it wouldn't work for me because I waited till I was 38 to get married. So I think I pulled my oats over and over again by then.
Well, when you're young, when you're younger, you have this a totally different. I always try to tease my kids and I say, if you're going to get married young, even if you have to do it over again when you're older, because when you're young, you have an innocent hope that you just really don't have after you've gotten older. You've noticed that, oh, you know, five of my friends have been married, have been divorced, and they didn't end pretty, you know. I can honestly say that, you know, as a young person, you're a lot more giving in a lot more ways than you are as you get older and you kind of like things done your way. Because I really don't even think if I got married at this particular point in my time, the only person I would personally want to marry would be The Rock.
But you know, The Rock didn't even stay married to his wife. After he became famous, he divorced her. Did you know that?
You know what? He wouldn't divorce me, though. I'm experienced.
Okay.
At least that's what I told my husband. I told him I would only ever leave him for The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. If he's listening, you hear me, Rock?
Look, you better stand in line, ma'am, because he's right behind.
I know.
There's so many women that like him. Oh, there's so many women. At first I did, but I don't – he doesn't have that appeal anymore since he went Hollywood. So people don't realize that, but a lot of the guys who weren't there, now that they're Hollywood, they're not. To me, they've lost that. That's just me. They lost that. Something's lost somewhere that used to be there. But, yeah, I was a Rock fan for a long time. I have a girlfriend that loves The Rock. I mean, really, really loves The Rock.
I try not to make my characters look like him, but
I can't wait to see how you described it. Because you know what? When I looked at the cover of this book, I was like, damn, I wouldn't have never known this was a teenager.
Well, I actually have pictures of my perception of who Peter looks like.
Okay.
And I've even posted him on my Facebook page. But there's a model that...
Uh-huh.
That fits his description, but I will just put a picture of him on my Facebook page.
Okay.
Now, just out of inspiration.
Okay.
And you know, he's a mix. His mom is from the islands, so he's you know, has a dark hue, this wild curly hair, very exotic looking. But identifies himself as, you know, truly African American. You know, that's one of his funny things is he likes to play with Pastor Finnegan, who is, you know, kind of the father figure in the orphanage he grew up with, who makes them speak proper English. And when he's out with, you know, his friends that he's on this journey with, he slips into slang so easily, and he does it because it's kind of his thing with, you know, Pastor Finnegan always trying to get him to, you know, speak proper English, so he always slips into slang, and it's kind of, you know, true to teens, you know, like even myself. I grew up in the city, and I went to a Catholic school, so I took some of this, you know, character from myself. And, you know, I used to have to talk, you know, a certain way when I was at school. And, you know, when I got home, I slipped right into slang, you know, because that was my home. You know, my peers talked that way. My cousins talked that way. My aunts talked that way. But when I was at that Catholic school, I had to practice proper English, proper grammar. And Peter got that trait from me because, you know, I wanted him to, you know, be true to form. And I see it with my son. My son has a lot of biracial friends. He has Kyle is very similar to my son's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of, is a white kid, and my son is African American, of course. And we tease his friend and say he's like a, you know, a Eminem wannabe. You know, not,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
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 Eminem wannabe,
yeah.
Because he slips mm-hmm. into the slang like my son does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because he totally wouldn't talk like that around his mom, but, you know, when he's around my son,
it's a whole different ballgame, huh?
Right, you know, he gets his cool on, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so that, you see that dynamic in this book a lot, because I wanted it to be really true to form to what I experienced with kids of different races coming together, getting along, realizing their differences, even, you know, joking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, you know, what you see indicative in most of my books, but you see it here too.
Mm-hmm. I noticed, I'm looking at you while you're talking, I see who you're talking about. This guy is, he's hot.
Isn't he?
Be honest with you. He's hot. He's hot. But he looks like he would be a 16-year-old or a maybe no more than about 18 at the most. But that is
right.
A hot picture of him. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I'm going to write them, they're going to be hot, right? You know?
Yeah, they got to be hot. Yeah, you can't have no foo-foos on there. You got to have some sexiness going on.
Exactly.
Have to go with the story.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I'm sure some people can pull off a not-so-handsome character being
yeah.
gorgeous to who he's in love
yeah.
with. But, you know, if someone's got to be in my head, they got to be someone I want to be in my head.
You're not who I asked for.
Exactly. You better go away, you know.
Now, are you going to just, so what genre do you actually say you write in right now? Is it basically the supernatural, fiction, sci-fi? What genre do you seem to feel like you fit in?
Well, the thing is, as a writer, I've been able to really just grow. So when I first started writing, I really stuck to science fiction because it allowed me to do a lot of creative things with the world building and the types of stories and characters that I created. You know, I have one character in a series that's about a blind teen vigilante, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I totally had fun writing her. Of course, you know, she's a little hard to take for some, you know, girls that want a soft, nice, sweet, kind of lovable character. She's got issues, but it works for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that because it was just really, really free. It was freeing. You know, I had so much creativity that I could do with writing a science fiction novels. Then I kind of got a bug to write paranormal from another author friend of mine. But even this is paranormal, but you're going to see a little sci-fi bent in it because really when you think of angels, you know, of course, this is me when I think of angels. They know the beginning and end of time. They are infinite beings. They know everything. So futuristic weapons, they would know those. I mean, when you look at the pyramids and you look at these amazing things that man has created, well, the angels one-up that because they live even longer than men. So why couldn't I put a futuristic bent on some of their weaponry, on some of the things that they were doing?
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I found my freedom with writing with this paranormal genre. Now, there's certain areas of paranormal that I probably won't write. Like, I love vampires, but I really don't think I could write a good one. I mean, I fell totally in love with the vampire Lestat, and I don't think I could ever top him. So So that's probably something I won't write. I won't write probably about, you know, horror. That's not something that I could do. Although there is a horror type of element in paranormal, I think, when it's done well. So this is really kind of, I think, the paranormal. And then I wrote a contemporary short YA romance. And like I said, I can really only do the romance of short, and then I have another one, a contemporary short romance coming out this summer called Thundering Love. That was fun to write.
Was it short too?
Yeah, that was short. I think my rhythm for contemporary romances are short. but they're fun short. I mean, my beta readers for them, they want me to write longer ones. I just, you know, I just can't seem to kick them out. But
it's not working.
It's not working. And I also realized something about my writing voice. And when I write my adult characters, I can only really write them for a short period of time. It's like this innate part of me wants to stay a kid. So
I
always start to write younger. So I think the paranormal, the contemporary romance as shorts and sci-fi will pretty much be my home spot. But you never know. With writing, you're always finding out new things about yourself. And I'm not afraid to try to write something new. I just won't, you know, I'm just afraid that I won't get it right. So,
but I mean, if you could write, and you just named about what, three to four different genres that you're writing in, that you can write in, I don't see you not being able to expand into anything else you want to do. I think it's the way that you see it, because, you know, if you're writing fiction, it's what's in your mind. And now if your mind doesn't feel it or you don't feel to do it, then you're not going to do it. But I don't see a problem with us, or I meant to say with you, in the sense that you don't limit yourself to just that. You know what you do good, but what can you do better? You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. And that's the whole thing as an author that I don't think people truly understand, because you can write and you don't ever have to publish. But
that's
that writing brings out a part of you and pushes you beyond what the normal is, what your normal everyday is. It really puts you into a different world, a different place that is completely your own creation. So it is an exercise of the mind that really can't be expressed in any other way. I mean, other artists feel that, like, you know, artists that paint, artists that sing, you know, because you can always tell when a singer doesn't have that voice. They may have all the notes, but that's something in them that needs to come out when that note comes out of their mouth that makes you feel the music. That's not there. So with writing, it's the same way. You have to really dig deep into yourself and unleash things about yourself that you can only do through writing. And that's why writing is so therapeutic. They do it for people that have deep grief. They do it for children, because it really is a way of taking that something out of yourself and pouring it on paper. So it is, you know, like I said, it's not to say I would ever, you know, not try to write something. It's whether or not I get it, you know.
Yeah, if you can get it, if you understand it, and you understand the reason why you want to write in this different genre and how important it is for you to do that. And that's true, you're right. You have to feel it. And it's like singing. It's like anything that you love to do. If you want to do it a different way, you have to learn how to do it that different way. And writing is the same way. I have a lot of stories in me, but people would probably look at me weird. And most of the time with my books, people always relate, is that you? No. Was that you and your husband in that book? No.
Oh,
Did your husband actually have an affair with someone? No. No. I have to always tell people no because they relate the character with me, and I'm not, no, that's not me, you guys. No, no, no.
Oh,
no. I don't.
And you know, no. I couldn't be a writer of, like, romance or erotica because, oh, my goodness.
Oh,
you
my
know,
God.
I have friends
no,
that
probably.
Write that, and they tell me they get stalked on, you know.
Yes, I've heard that.
They say, oh, my goodness, I get stalked on social media. I don't like to hang out on social media because it's a dangerous place for me. And I couldn't imagine, you know, having to deal with that. But you know what? When people have read the villains that I, you know, that particular I wrote in this one because I spent a lot of time on this villain there, you know, they're like, where did you pull that from? And I have to tell you, he was a hard character to write.
Uh-huh.
And because I had to really kind of just free myself of what I thought was right and wrong.
Uh-huh.
And really
yeah, you have
write.
To come out yourself.
Exactly. And so that's what you have to do. You know, you're not writing about, you know, a romance novel is not, you know, if it has intrigue and it has infidelity or it has twists and turns, you're not writing about yourself. You have to take yourself completely out of the equation.
Out of it, yeah. Yeah, and that's what I basically did. But still, people ask me that when I did my book signing. Come on, Selita, tell me the truth. Is that you? Come on, you know you and Henry. I was like, you guys, no, it was not me and me and my husband. No, you know, and I don't have to lie about it. No, but see, people don't understand writers. I'm glad you said it because people don't truly understand. We're like artists. We come up with the most funkiest characters or the funkiest scene. We'll come up with this thing that, like, what in the hell is going on in their head? People don't understand that we don't fit in with everybody else because of us being writers. We don't fit in with the norm, what they consider, quote-unquote, the norm. You know what I'm saying? So it's why
mm-hmm.
we're kind of outsiders, whether we don't want to admit it or not. Oh, I'm just like, no, you're not, simply because you're an author. And then you look at what you write. You're not like everybody else because nobody could sit down and do this. And I have people say that too. I don't know how you guys can do that, how you can write easily. I sit down, be quiet to myself, and I let my imagination help me. You know what I'm saying? People don't understand how you can do that. You know, it's like a weird thing to them, like something new and, oh, my God, you're from outer space. So we're
right.
not like everybody else. And that's a good thing, actually.
And what you are is, even though, for me, I'm an engineer, so I have to go to work every day. And I love my job. I really do because I work around guys all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And I really get a kick out of that, you know, because
yeah.
I get to tell them what to do, and they actually listen. So, but the thing is, when I write, it's like a vacation. People don't understand,
yeah.
okay, how is
yeah.
it that you work full-time, you have four kids, and you come home and kick out 3 books a year? That is freaking crazy how you do it. They don't
yeah.
realize that the writing is therapeutic to me. All of the things that I had to basically keep to myself, all the thoughts that ran rampant in my head while I was sitting in boring meetings all day,
mm-hmm.
I get to come home and I get to be the kid with superpowers. I get to be the guy that gets
yeah.
to save the world. I get
yeah.
to be that character that evil one that I had to deal with all day at work, and I don't understand why they still have a job. I get to be that person, you know, without feeling guilty about it, you know. So to me, the writing is just a very, it's like being able to step in the lives and the bodies of other people, but give the perspective of someone that's on the outside looking in, only picking away little pieces to reveal parts at a time. It's
mm-hmm.
really, truly an art.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Because everybody can't do it. It's not for everybody. You know, no matter how many times you meet people say, oh, I want to write a book. You're saying it too easy. So to me, I don't think you just want to do it because you think it's, you know, fascinating. We always want to try something new, you know what I'm saying? And everybody's not a writer because you got to have the imagination. You have to have an imagination. Even though you're writing nonfiction, you have to have that spirit in you to be able to do that. Even when you're writing on the truth of something, you've got to have a spirit to even be able to write, to have the power to write. Either way it goes, you've got to have that in you. And you can't just sit there and just write anything. And everybody's not a writer, just like everybody can't. I can't sing. How am I going to tell you, you know what I'm doing? I'm getting ready to audition for a group. I can't sing worth a crap. I know I can't do it, so I'm not going to go in that lane. I'm staying in my lane. My lane is writing, and I can do a little bit of producing, and then I do the radio, and I do a little acting on the side. But those are the things I know I'm secure with. I'm not going to take on nothing else. But you have people that think they can do, you know, everything, and really when they only need to stick to one or two things.
Well, you really have to love writing, especially writing and publishing, you know, in order. Because when I tell people the process, oh, yeah, you kicked out $3 a year? That's great. I got the pleasure of meeting L.A. Banks, and I don't know if you know who she is.
But she was a
phenomenal woman. Best-selling African-American author of the Vampire Huntress series.
Okay.
And I got to meet her before she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she told her story of how she kicked out all of these novels a year, five novels a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed because I thought three was, you know, the bomb, you know.
Uh-huh.
Now, I really didn't. At first, I really didn't think it was that great until people were saying to me, are you kidding me? You finished three novels? Are you crazy? That's so amazing. And I was like, well, maybe it is pretty amazing. Okay, well, but that was my natural rhythm. You know, everybody has their natural rhythm. And I couldn't understand how she was kicking out that much. And I asked her, and she made it, you know, she was doing this because she needed to make an income because her daughter had gotten injured as a baby, and she was trying to make an income to stay home. So she basically went in the write zone and was writing stuff and never wrote as a young person, never, you know, figured she would be a writer. She just sat down to write, to do contests, and then before she knew it, she got a deal and started just kicking out these novels. And I asked her how she got her mind around doing it. She said, I just write. I just do it. You know, I sit down, butt in chair, I do it, I do it, I do it, because I want to do it, I have a reason to do it. And that's the thing is, you know, you don't ever have to finish what you write as long as it gives you pleasure. At the end of the day, me being a writer, I do this because it gives me pleasure.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do it because I want to be a multimillionaire. I don't do it because I want to make this a movie. I don't do it just because I want to be driving a Benz and say I'm an author. I do this because I truly love doing it.
You sure you don't want to do that? Go drive around in the Benz? You sure?
You know what? That would be nice.
Yes.
That would be nice, you know. But, you know, realistically, the life of an author is not that way.
No, but you know what? Some of us, and I will say us, some of us puts on that facade, not all of us, that we really making a lot of money doing this. They don't understand whether you're self-published or you're dealing with a publishing company. The money doesn't flow out like that. You know, it doesn't. It doesn't flow out where you got it coming out of every corner.
Right. And the money doesn't necessarily come from book sales. And that's the other hidden gem. You know, the money comes from subsidiary. Are you able to tell your subsidiary right? That's where the real money is, you know, in this business. Can you get a movie op? Can you sell serialization rights? Can you sell the foreign rights? That's when you're going to get a big chunk of change at one time. But because of the ebook revelation, we've been able to really find a way to make a viable income, monthly income, selling ebooks. And that's amazing because I went into this business when it wasn't cool to own your own publishing company or to, you know, my husband and I co-own Phenomenal One Press. And I can honestly say we've done phenomenal things with Phenomenal One Press that I would have never you know, thought I could do, but I didn't ever think I couldn't do it, you know?
Really? So you have your own poem? I was going to ask you that. That's so weird you said that, because I was going to ask you, would you think about doing your own publishing company? You've already started one? You've already got it going?
Yes. Phenomenal One Press is the press that publishes all of my books. We also had one author that we published a short story for. And I got two publishing deal offers when I first started this business. And it took me, you know, 6 months of blood, sweat, and tears to work my book and get it in shape. And when I got my first publishing contract, I literally cried because I was like, you know, I'm getting nothing. I'm getting nothing.
Uh-huh.
For all of the work I did, this is like cents on the dollar for each hour I put into this book.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, at that time, you know, owning a publishing company wasn't cool for most people. But I grew up in the city. I grew up in D.C., you know. And in D.C., I used to live for the vendors that came out to push those self-published books. I went to Bowie State University, where authors that were publishing works that meant something to me. I don't even know if you remember, Abena Walker had a wonderful poem, and she came to my school, and she recited her poetry. I remember taking the little bit of money I had, and I didn't have a lot, honey, and I bought her book, and it meant so much to me. It's completely out of print, and I still have my friends from college emailing me and saying, do you have that book with that poem in it? And yes, and I'm not giving it to you, and I've
You're
read the poetry.
It.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You know, I read the poetry from that book to my children.
Uh-huh.
And the thing was, so it was never a frightening thing for me. I just knew that I had to do things a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first started the biz, my husband, he was really the forefront because he just wanted me to write 3 books the first year. And he wanted to basically publish as much as possible the first 2 years of the publishing company. And we did it the traditional way. We found a distributor. You know, at the time, ebooks wasn't a big thing. We had to go through the traditional route. And he did the footwork. He went to stores. He got my book in libraries. He really worked it. And we had us having a distributor helped a lot. But there were times when we would come up against someone that said, you know, hey, we do not support self-published authors. We will not read your stuff. You know, we had a editor, we paid someone to edit our work, and he would make the argument that I'm a small business. Just like any small business, your corner store, your small mom-and-pop craft store, that you would go in and you would look and check out their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you check out my stuff and then make your decision? If you read the first 2 pages and you're not interested, that's fine. But you're going to turn me away and turn up your nose because I'm my own business owner. And, you know, I couldn't say that to them because, you know, this is my work. I'm very, you know, I'm attached. But he made it very, he made me feel proud that I was part owner of this business. And what happened was when there was a time when people were saying, oh, well, you can't get a review from us. You can't get a review from us. I was getting reviews from these reputable places. Because he basically, you know, called their card. And some of them would say no, but some of them were saying yes. And we were selling, you know, our books. You know, I was selling enough to make a little bit of a profit. You know, I was a millionaire. But I didn't think I was doing anything great. I was just so grateful that people were reading it and that kids, I would go to the schools that I went to, grew up around, and these kids will come up to me and hug me and say, I'm so glad you wrote a story or a book with someone that looks like me in it or someone like me. And then when I went to BEA as the co-owner of Phenomenal One Press, I didn't think I was going to get a line of people that would be interested in me signing my book.
Yeah.
I had signed over 120 books.
Oh, my God, that is blessing.
For little old me. And you would think that was my first year. And you would think, okay, wow. The second year I went back, do you know people came looking for me? Oh, I didn't see you in the program. I'm so glad. I mean, to me, it was just about believing in yourself, and that's really what I write about. I write about believing in yourself, think you can do it, give it a shot, because at the very least, you're going to learn something from the experience. And
exactly.
I learned amazing things. I was so humbled that a best-selling author that was traditionally published, L.A. Banks, actually took the time to come talk to me, to see me, to encourage me in my writing, and to ask me about self-publishing, because she was turning the tides and self-publishing her own YA novel. So, you know, and then when I started off at YA Lit Chat, I was one of the moderators. I was the only one that was, you know, had my own publishing company. And I won't say self-published because I am a publisher. You know, I just happen to publish my stuff and some other stuff, but my stuff. And, you know, a lot of my peers, they were going after the traditional. And I would sometimes get discouraged because, you know, I maybe it was myself, but I kind of felt that they were, they weren't really supportive of my, you know, what I had decided to do, because it was totally out of the box. And my husband said, you know, hey, just stick with it. He's a great encourager. Just stick with it. You know, you never know. You may be a good example for them. And to me, I think just me being in their space gave them the confidence to do this themselves, so that a lot of the other moderators now, I look back and I say a good handful of them that are published have published their own works and are doing well at it. You know, Georgia even opened up a huge publishing company, Lump Nine Books, which is doing phenomenal things, phenomenal things. And, you know, and I think a small part of me is happy because maybe me cutting my teeth on this journey encouraged them to reach their dreams.
Yes, and, you know, we don't realize the influence we have on others. We don't pay attention to it. It's not that we're so big that we don't. We just don't see ourselves that we can actually influence somebody. I think, well, that I won't say everybody's like that, but me, I don't see. I hear people tell me things like that, but it's like, really? You know, did I really influence you? How? You know, I get amazed when people say that to me. Not to say I'm no famous person or anything. I'm a very simple person. But I think it's the way that we carry ourselves, how we talk to people, the things that we talk to them about when it comes to our books, and they see the passion in us. Like when I was listening to you talk about your character, I saw you. I didn't see your character. I saw you because you say you take yourself away. You come out of it, but you become these different people in order for you to write the characters that you do. So it's like they see the character in you. They see the little boy. They see the teenager. They see all the stuff that we're talking about or what we're saying in the book. So they look for that.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? They look for that in you. How did you come up with that? Like you were talking about the erotica and how you write something about erotica, you're getting stalked. People see you as one of the females.
I know. My poor friend, she's the sweetest. I mean, have you ever seen one of the leading ones? What is her name? Zane. You know?
Yes.
You know, this little lady, you know, who was so, you know, sweet and, you know, and you would never think that she's writing all this stuff.
No, I think what shocked everybody, she had written a lot of stuff way before anybody saw her. And when she came out, everybody was like, uh-uh, because you wouldn't put her face with what she was writing. But I said, this homegirl knows some stuff. Because we used to have, like, we'd sit around and read, you know, read books, or I'd be reading phrases from one book. I'd be reading it over the phone to one of my girlfriends or something. And when you see this little, cute little lady walk out of nowhere, she's posing with different people, it's like, no way. Ain't no way this is the same lady that's writing this. But But homegirl got her imagination, okay?
Exactly. And that's the whole thing, because you have to. For me, I mostly write predominantly male characters.
Okay.
And
what's underneath that?
Well, you know what? I work with men all day long. I used to be a tomboy when I was a kid.
Okay.
So the thing is, you know, you get that all the time because, you know, I'm L.M. Preston. So I would go to a sci-fi convention and they're like, where's L.M.? Where's L.M.? And, you know, and I'm about 5 feet tall, okay? And so I raise my hand. I'm L.M. Preston, and the looks on their face is priceless.
Because I asked Tamika, is it a he or she? I'm not for sure. And I kept saying it before you called in. I was like, I'm not for sure if this is a he or she, because you have L.M. And I thought of being a boy automatically. When she gave me the name, I said, oh, that must be a guy. Okay, I'll go ahead and do the guy. I would have never thought, which is a great way of doing that, is that I would never thought that you were female. I thought you were a guy. I really did. I thought you were a guy. So it works,
yeah.
Okay?
I know. And it's funny because it's kind of, so I always say, well, I wonder how this will work with my, you know, now my budding contemporary YA romance side, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, because women don't want guys writing their romance, I don't think.
No, they don't. No. Now, another thing, now, what about your race? What do they think with the way you write? Do they think, because, you know, that plays some parts and stuff, too. People don't want to admit it, but it's underlying. Believe me, I know, it's underlying. Okay.
Who?
I said when it comes to race, even though they don't pay attention to it right off the bat, but it's an underlying theme. It's invisible. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm not really sure.
It does. It plays a part in it.
Race. Now, you know, for me, because if you look at my covers,
mm-hmm.
and this is the thing that...
Right. I see you have a lot of...
Right. The thing is, for our covers, and we've had to trick this, my middle grade novels, the Explorer X series, the main character, you know, he looks... ethnic. To make a note, my characters come to me as they are. I don't really think about their race. And I don't really, you know, and I think in a very diverse, racially diverse way, because that's where I live. You know, I live in Washington, D.C. My family is very diverse. I mean, when I say very diverse, if I was to go down the list, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, all in the same family. So that's kind of the way I think. So when I come up with my characters, a lot of my characters are biracial.
Okay.
Or, you know, black. So Peter is biracial. His love interest is Hispanic but looks white. And identifies with being white. And I did have a beta reader kind of say, well, why, if she's Hispanic, does she identify with being white? And it's because I know that some do, because mm-hmm. I have Hispanic folks in my family that look mm-hmm. white. And when they go out and they get a job, that's what they portray to the world. That's what they are.
Exactly.
Second generation, they don't even speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that, and I get that, because that's kind of where I live, and I take it for granted, and so mm-hmm. I write it. So the thing is, the race thing, I do, I don't see in my reviews where it necessarily is revealed, because I think readers really don't care. Mm-hmm. But they do care when they're looking at the cover.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they look at the cover, and I have one, my YA contemporary, Flutter of Love, that both of the characters are African-American,
mm-hmm.
but you can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a trick that I had to do with the cover artist, that I basically found a picture, and she said, well, what do you want me to do with the picture? I said, make it a shadow, black them out, and make it so that you don't know until you start to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a completely marketing ploy because even though my characters are diverse, I'm not writing an urban novel. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not urban. It's not written with an urban tone of, you know, all the urban type drama. It may be touched in it, but that's not really the audience for it. They would be ticked off if I tried to promote that to them. But but there's, you know, like in Flutter of Love, they do live in an urban city. You do see a little bit of that urban flavor in there, but it really could be pretty much anybody having that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I have to, you know, so the English is proper. It's not a whole lot of slang. It's a little bit. But for cover's sake, it really has to play on where you want your novel positioned.
I see what you're saying. I hear you. I got you. And you know what? That is a great publishing ploy to do. And you made me think about something when I asked you that question. On the front of White Dove, which is a book I wrote, I have an Indian girl on the front of that. And she, you couldn't tell if the story was about, the only reason why you know it's an Indian is because White Dove is an Indian name.
Mm-hmm. Nice title, by the way. All right.
Thank you. You couldn't tell until you turned it on the back to see, oh, okay, a black person wrote this. But you could never tell because I put a little bit of my picture on there. But if you pick it up from the front cover, it's like, okay, man, okay. And then you turn it over and I, you know. But I don't know. If I was to do any other race on the cover of my books, it would probably be Hispanic, Indian, African-American, probably the ones I would basically probably. And like you said, it has to be toward whatever you're talking about. And you said something earlier about writing. I write a lot of crap. I'm telling you, I write stories I never finish. I have these stories in the back of my head, and I write them down, and I don't do anything else with them. I don't. And then I find myself having to go back and say, you know what, okay, Salita, read this again. Now, would this be a good story? Yeah, man, that would be a good story. I have problems with that. You said something about always just write it all down, and if you never finish it, it's fine, as long as you got it down on paper. But then I have somebody else saying, if you got it down on paper, you might as well finish it. Right?
Well, that's not necessarily true. There's stories I've written that I just couldn't finish.
Yeah.
And I couldn't finish them because if they weren't exciting me to finish them, is the reason why I'm not finishing them. I mean, really think about it. Your energy comes out of you and goes into your written page.
Exactly.
If your energy stops, your reader's going to be able to tell something's missing.
Okay.
They may not be able to put their finger on it.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to be able to know, oh, no, this went off kilter here. You know, I'm very distant from this character. Because
uh-huh.
then without you realizing it, you're not pouring in soul, sweat, emotion, feeling into the book. You're kind of distancing yourself from that character, and it shows when the reader reads it.
Ah, see, I like that. I like that. I never thought about it like that. Yeah, I like that. Okay. So I'll know the next time.
Well, because when you read it, when you go back and read it, you can tell. If
yeah,
you haven't touched it in a while,
yeah,
you can tell you kind of tuned out, you know.
No, I don't really want to do this one. Next.
Exactly.
Now,
and that's really.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that's really the core of the talent of writing is there are some people that can write anything and they can finish it and they don't have to be attached to it. Those people
mm-hmm.
are rare. So if
yes.
you know that you've written something and you don't have the passion for it anymore.
Exactly.
You know, then you have to step away from it. But the exercise of writing, you had the time that you had the passion for it,
mm-hmm.
it did what it needed to do for you. It let you get that character out that was maybe distracting you from another character.
Okay, I like that. I definitely like that. Yeah, I never thought about it like that. But that's true. You've gotten it out. Okay, now I'm shaking that off. But then can you, if that's a good character, you can use her or use him in another story if you wanted to, once you develop that character. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You're not going to keep him in the same story, but you can push him over to another story. Is that
exactly.
what you're saying?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I did that. I did that for one of my starter novels that I didn't finish.
Mm-hmm.
I took
mm-hmm.
that character from that trunk novel that I didn't finish, and I put her in Flutter of Love.
Okay.
And she fit there perfectly.
Oh, man. So, tell me this. What is your method once you have a story in you, I'll put it to you like that, what is your method of sitting down and starting to write, and how long do you spend on doing that? Since you say you kick out 3 novels a year, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty, I've been writing as an engineer for a long time, and usually that type of writing doesn't excite me. So I've developed
okay.
a process for doing that
uh-huh.
that works for me. I uh-huh. generally sit down and I flesh out the entire novel with a high-level outline. And it usually takes me a month and a half to just do that. But the neat thing about doing that is I can be editing another novel. I could be writing another novel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just writing my outline. So the outline will be kind of like chapter 1, okay, like in the case with Peter, Saints in Purgatory the Rain, the outline said chapter 1, Peter kills a girl.
Okay.
And that's really what has to happen in chapter 1.
Okay.
And then, you know, the girl gives, you know, so I do that part first, the big thing that has to happen in that chapter. And then I, you know, as I'm writing the chapter or getting ready to write the chapter, I'll say, okay, well, all right, so the girl has to die, but, hey, I don't want her to just die. Maybe she should give him something. And that'll be, you know, kind of like the indentation of it. And
okay.
that's pretty much all I need to sit down and write is I just need to know what plot point I have to hit in that chapter. And for me, the reason why I do that is because I make sure that something happens in every chapter.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a big thing happening, but I always end that chapter with something. A big gotcha.
Okay.
That makes you want to go to the next chapter.
The next chapter. Okay.
Right.
Now, have you thought about doing nonfiction?
Well, yes, I did consider doing a nonfiction book on kind of my publishing journey, but then I don't get quite excited about that. So.
It's really
yes.
hard. Seriously, it is so hard to be serious. It is so hard. And I, oh, my God, I got so many serious stories that I really need to get out, maybe just for therapy. But it's so hard to sit down and actually write them. I don't know why. Maybe because we're so full of imagination that we don't. I can't. It's
well,
hard.
Well, we don't.
Hmm.
You know, that's the thing is you want to do what's fun. I mean, when you do a nonfiction, you kind of have to be serious, and you got to be on point, and you got to stay within the confines of this world. But when you're writing, you know, creatively, you know, hey, if I want to do something wild and crazy, jump off a bridge, you know, and I'm still living, I can do that. I mean, come on, anybody would choose to do the fun thing.
Yeah, to do the fun thing first. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right, you're right. Okay, LM, I like that. LM, I thank you so much. You are such a blessing. And that's why I love talking to my aunts, because they teach me so much. Little things, little tidbits of information that I can use within myself, if I consider myself a writer, I can use those type of tidbits of information and advice that you give, because I think it's awesome. I would like for you to tell us where we can get a copy of your book. And let me ask you this. Are you taking in any submissions with your publishing company right now, or you're not?
We're only taking short story submissions at this time, because they are quicker for us to produce.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, short story submissions. And also what we, as far as finding the books, you can find them at any, you know, retailer. This is distributed to bookstores, libraries. You can pretty much get it anywhere. It's only available now in ebook. It doesn't come out in print until May.
Okay, okay. Okay, great information. And if anybody wanted to contact you, how would we go about contacting you?
The best way is there's a email me through the website, and that may go to my co-partner in the publishing house, if that's for, you know, fan mail and things like that. Or you can just, you know, hang out. I hang out all the time on Facebook, almost to the point where it's a really bad habit. And
yeah, I know.
And I'm on Twitter a lot, too, so you can tweet me, because I do tweet back. And I do have a blog that I tend to hang out on quite a bit, too. So you can see that I'm a little bit of a social media hound. And I'm also on Google+, so you can holler at me there, too.
Are you with LinkedIn?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn, although I don't hang out there very much.
Yeah. I'm just starting to, and I find it very fascinating with the information they have on there. But I think it's interesting. It's kind of more interesting than I with Facebook, because I'm getting kind of Facebooked out, I think, to a certain extent.
I understand, but you'll be back.
You will be back. I'm going to make sure of that.
Well, you know, everybody comes back to Facebook, the older people, because my teen readers don't really hang out on Facebook anymore. They're on Tumblr and Instagram.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to let Miss L.M. Preston go. She is the author of Purgatory Rain, and just by her telling us about, I think it's a great book. She told us where we can catch her. She's on Facebook. She's on Twitter. And you can get a copy of her book anywhere from what she's saying. She has a company. And any short story submissions she will take. Now, let me ask you something. Short stories, what is the page limit on the short stories?
Oh, page limit we have is more like word limit. So we only have 25K.
I'm sorry, I'm going to say word limit. I apologize.
Oh, 25K.
Okay, got it.
And young adult,
romance type
is the genre that we're looking for now.
Gotcha. Looking for. All right. Well, I want to say thank you very much, and ma'am, you have a nice evening, and
thank you
again.
For having me.
Bye-bye, sweetie.
It was fun.
It was great. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida. We want to thank you for listening in, and stay tuned.